The second to last shar in the Orchos Sadikim is the Shar HaTorah. Mm-hmm. It's the gate of Torah. We could spend weeks talking about the importance of Torah, and we will talk about particularly the relationship between the people here and Torah at the end. But let's first discuss the words of the Orchos Sadikim. He begins by telling us the Mishnah Pirkei Avos in the fourth chapter says there are three kesarim, there are three crowns that exist in the world, three places of honor. The first is the Keser Kahuna, the crown of the Kohanim. But unless you're a Kohen, you can't go and wear that crown. You can't have that honor of the Kohen unless you're a Kohen. So it's not open to most people. The next is the Keser Malchus, the crown of the kingship of the Jewish people. And unless you descend from David HaMelech and you become the king of Israel, well then the Keser Malchus, the crown of the kingship, is also not accessible to everybody here. But the last crown, the Mishnah says, is the Keser Torah, the crown of Torah. The fact that a person can connect to Torah, have a relationship with the Torah, and grow and build in Torah is something that is available to every single Jew. Every single person sitting here can connect to and have Torah be a part of their life. The Pasuk says, Torah tziva lanu Moshe, Morasha kilas Yaakov. The Torah is a Yerusha, it's an inheritance. It's something that everybody has a connection to through learning Torah. And says the Mishnah Pirkei Avos that the Keser of Torah, that the crown of Torah is greater than all the other crowns. It is the greatest crown that a person can attain. So he makes a number of important points here, just in general, about the mitzvah of learning Torah. First of all, the Mishnah in Peah says, and we say this every single morning, V'talmud Torah keneged kulam, right? That the mitzvah of learning Torah is as weighty, as great as all the other mitzvahs in the Torah. It is the most important mitzvah that a person can fulfill, and that is the learning of Torah. The meaning of this, as the Orchos Sadikim, is that when a person learns Torah and they can't fulfill other mitzvahs, let's say now you come to a shir, but there, because I'm coming to a shir, I can't fulfill other mitzvahs that might be available to me right now, because right now we're learning Torah. So if that's the case, when you learn Torah, you show a desire to fulfill the mitzvahs of Hashem. And when you learn Torah, and your learning Torah prevents you from doing other mitzvahs, says the Orchos Sadikim, then it's like you've done that mitzvah. That's what it means, Talmud Torah keneged kulam. You're coming to a shiur right now, and now maybe you're missing out on other mitzvah opportunities. I'd like to do that mitzvah, but right now I'm connecting to Torah, and Torah really encompasses all the mitzvahs, so it's as if you're doing that other mitzvah. That's what it means. Okay? That's what it means, keneged kulam. It's in the sense that you receive the schar for the learning, for the mitzvah you weren't able to perform. He then says, if a person wants the keser Torah, the crown of Torah, they have to be totally dedicated to learning Torah. It must be a primary focus for a person, the more important than making money, getting kavod. And if making money is more important to you than learning Torah, they're never going to become great in learning Torah. Now, again, to be clear here, much of what we're going to say here does in a greater sense pertain to men who have a chiyuv of Talmud Torah every single moment. Men have a chiyuv of Talmud Torah at every free moment. If a man is not, doing a mitzvah or making a living or, engaged in shalom bayis or spending time with his kids, the chinuch of his kids, then he has a mitzvah to be learning Torah every single second. That's v'hagisabo yom and v'layel, to learn Torah day and night. But the messages of the importance of Torah are relevant here nonetheless. He then says, if a person learns Torah l'shma for the right reasons, then a Kadosh Baruch will grant that person wisdom in Torah beyond what he could have naturally attained. The Medrash tells that Avram Avinu learned Torah, and he wanted to dedicate himself to Hashem, to his Torah, and that essentially, he just, understood the secrets of the Torah without even Hashem talking to him. If a person learns Torah on a super, super high level and really dedicates himself fully to Torah, Hashem will give you a gift. Well, you'll just understand things, and you'll just have a deep understanding of Torah that you never could have naturally attained on your own. One could even attain wisdom, says the Orchos Sadikim, that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't get in Har Sinai. That's how far it goes. You could understand a part of the Torah that even Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know. That's how great learning Torah for the right reasons are. The Mishnah Pirkei Avos lays out 48 ways, the Memches Kinyanei Torah. There are 48 tools that a person needs to have to learn Torah. If you look in the 6th chapter of Pirkei Avos, so there it lays out all the 48 ways. And there you go and learn those things. That teaches a person how to become great in learning Torah. You must be careful to always be thinking about learning Torah, because if you take your mind away from Torah, it will cause you to forget your learning. By always learning Torah, it keeps us focused on Hashem, the mitzvos, and the proper way to act. In fact, he says, one of the reasons for shichacha, one of the reasons why Hashem makes us forget things, is because if we remembered every single thing that we learned, then we wouldn't spend so much time learning Torah, and we'd waste the rest of our day, right? If you remembered every single thing you learned from kindergarten to 12th grade, so then you would know pretty much like all the basics you would need to know to live as a Jew. You probably have everything now. You know most of Tanakh, all the halachas you learned. You wouldn't forget anything. And then you just kind of like waste the day away. You would never go back to learn. You would never come out to a shir. You would never, you know, pick up a sefer and learn. Because you say, whatever, I remember everything I learned from K to 12. So like, what's the point anymore? So says your chassidikim, the point, in some respects, of forgetting what we learn is that it forces us to go back to the Torah, to go learn the Torah again, to engage in the Torah again, in order to remind us of these important lessons that we have from the Torah. By learning Torah whenever we can, it keeps us from batala, from doing wasteful things. And if you cannot learn something verbally, let's say you're sitting at a wedding, and you can't, you can't take out a sefer and learn from a sefer. You're not going to sit at a wedding and put in your headphones, and you're going to start listening to a shir in the middle of a chuppah. It might be a little bit rude. So what are you going to do? You just think, he says. Just think about Torah. Maybe you heard a shir that morning. Just review in your mind the shir that you learned. Maybe there was something you have in class that was meaningful to you. So just review in your mind. And he says, that's V'hagisa b'yom v'layla. He says, V'hagisa, the Lord V'hagisa means to think, to contemplate. You should contemplate on the Torah day and night. This is actually a machlokus in the Vilna Gaon and the Shulchan Aruch, where you fulfill the mitzvah of Talmud Torah by thought. Do you fulfill the mitzvah? So obviously, Ruch HaSadikim says yes, but the implication would be regarding Birchas HaTorah. If you wake up in the morning and you want to think Divrei Torah, do you have to recite Birchas HaTorah before you think Divrei Torah? Yeah. So that's the machlokas in the Shulchan Aruch and the Vilna Gaon.
Why would it be the machlokas?
Because it could be that the word vahagisa means to speak. It's a machlokas whether the word vahagisa means to think or to speak. So if it means to speak, actually the Maharal writes this. The Maharal says that it's called Divrei Torah. Right? Why do we call it Divrei Torah? It's words of Torah. The mitzvah is to speak Torah. The Maharal thinks that enunciating and speaking out Torah is actually a higher level than just looking at the words or thinking Torah. It's a higher form of Talmud Torah. You have to say out the words. Yeah.
Yeah, but why would you need to think about Torah at a wedding? Like, isn't it a mitzvah itself to just like when you do the mitzvah
of the wedding?
Yeah.
Because the wedding, from if the chuppah is called for 6, and let's say you stay there for 5 hours, so not all 5 hours is the mitzvah of Simchas Chasim Nekala. Meaning, when the Chasim Kala see you, and they're happy that you're there, so that's mitzvah Simchas Chasim Kala. But when you're like pounding the shmorg, and like nobody's like, you know, paying attention to you, so it's delicious, but it is also not the mitzvah Simchas Chasim Kala. It could
like,
be.
You shouldn't like not talk to people because you're together, right?
No, correct. You have to have derech eretz, you have to have midos, 100%, for sure. For sure. Okay, what does a person gain from learning Torah? Says the Ruch HaSadikim, you will have wisdom, Yiras Hashem, Derech Eretz, humility, tznius, all good deeds, midos, and a Kadosh Baruch will provide for you what you need, and the Torah will protect you. And Mishnah Pirkei Avos says that if a person learns Torah l'shma, you'll be zocha l'dvarim harbe. You'll be merit. You'll have merit of a lot of nice things, and certainly the schar for learning Torah in Olam Haba is great as well. Midos tovos and acting l'shma are very important for learning Torah. If one lacks yiras Hashem and good midos, or learns Torah for the wrong reasons, then Torah will not help you. Derech Eretz, kadma l'Torah. Derech Eretz is an integral part of learning Torah. You can and should learn Torah even if it's shelo l'shma. We talk about this all the time, right? Shelo l'shma, ba l'shma, right? If you learn Torah for the wrong reasons, either for grades or for kavod, for honor, or something like that. So hopefully, you'll come to a place where you'll learn it for the right reasons. Yeah?
So if you learn Torah for the right reasons, you say Hashem, right view.
Correct.
But if you learn Torah and have a job,
let's ask me that question at the end. Okay? Ask me that question at the end. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Fine. Can we also just pass the water for a second? So, it has to be careful. You have to be careful with this as well. You can't use Torah in order to abuse somebody or somebody else. The Tosa says that Shelo Lishma Balashma doesn't apply to Lekanter, to learn Torah to attack somebody. Right? Let's say you knew that tonight we were going to learn the Shar HaTorah Nerach HaTzadikim, so you go and you think that you're going to look at the Shar HaTorah before you come to the Shir, and you're going to find like a question, like a difficult thing about it that doesn't make any sense, so you can come to the Shir and make the person who's giving the Shir look bad. So you can like attack them or like knock them down because you want to make yourself look good. That is not called Shelo Lishma. That's called Lekanter, to attack. That is never going to work out. The Gemara says about such a person, better they wouldn't have been born. That's pretty harsh. Yeah. But the Medrash tells us the following story. We all know who Elisha ben Avuya was. We've heard of Elisha ben Avuya. Elisha ben Avuya was a Tana. He was actually the Rebbe of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir was Rabbi Meir Balanes. Anybody's been to his kever before? Up near Tveria? No? Rabbi Meir, no trips? No?
I think I went.
You went to Rabbi Meir's kever?
Yeah, Tveria.
Yes. So Rabbi Meir Balanes, Rabbi Meir is the famous Tana, who's brought in almost many, many of the Mishnayos. So Rabbi Meir's Rebbe was a man named Elisha ben Avuya. He's often called in the Gemara, in Chazal, Acher, which means other. What happened to him? He went off the Derech. He was a very big Talmid Chacham, and he just, even though he knew a lot of Torah, his heart and his spirit was not in the right place, and eventually, through a number of events in his life, he went off the Derech, and he left Judaism. So the Gemara discusses, why did that happen? What was the seed that led to that? So he says that when he was born, that his father tells him the story. His father, Avuya, had a bris milah for his son, Elisha, and they invited all the people of the town, all the wealthy people of Yerushalayim, and all of the Talmid HaChachamim. And at that bris milah was Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua. And Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua were sitting there. People were like singing songs and drinking on one side of the bris milah of the Suda. And Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua said to themselves, well, they're doing what they like to do, so let's do what we like to do. Let's go learn Torah on the side. And the story goes that they were learning Torah with such intensity that fire began to appear around them. Like a ring of fire appeared around them. Everybody was just like stopping and gaping at them. Like, what's going on? These people are very holy. So Avuya turned to them and said, if this is what a person can accomplish in Torah, that they have this like intensity, this cover, that people respect them so much, so then I want my son to have this as well. I want my son to have these like cool powers, that Torah, that fire will come down when he learns Torah. And that's how he raised him, to become this Talmud Chacham. So Elisha ben Avuya said, my father raised me that my Torah should be for kavod. The whole essence of why he wanted me to learn Torah is that I would bring him honor, and there would be kavod, and I would be impressive. And it's true, at the end of the day, Elisha ben Avuya knew a lot of Torah. A lot of Torah. He's quoted in Pirkei Avos. But because the motivations from his upbringing were so faulty and were so misguided, so eventually, just the trajectory was all the way off. You know, like from math, right? If something is off by 1 degree, it might be 1 degree over here, but by the time it continues to travel out, it will be miles and miles away. So from the beginning, his perspective and his connection to Torah was so faulty that eventually, by the time he grew up, he was so distant from Torah. Yeah?
What if it's a combination of both? Like, what if someone, I guess it's a little bit different, but like, if they want to raise their kid with a good reputation and a good name, and like a Shem Tov, like, instead of a Keter Tov?
Yeah.
Like, but they still want them to be like learning for the sake of learning, but like a little bit the motivation behind raising their child in that way is because they want them to get that honor and to they want themselves to receive that. They want.
So then it could be problematic because a parent who wants to their children to learn Torah because it will bring them honor or will bring their child honor, so then it's not avasar, it's not the love of Torah, it's the love of themselves.
So isn't it important to have that recognition?
Recognition for your midos, for being a good person, but not because of your learning of Torah.
Right.
That should come naturally. If a person knows a lot of Torah, so they'll get the honor they deserve, and if they don't, then they won't. But we
so
don't learn Torah.
Like the midos aspect of the person would be okay?
For sure, 100%. A person should want to have a shame tovin when it comes to midos. The Orach HaTzadikim then does something very interesting. What he does is that he essentially goes on to summarize the Rambam's introduction to the Mishnah. Now, we're going to learn what the Orach HaTzadikim says, and this is just an important discussion. I know we've discussed many of these topics in the past. We discussed a bit of it on Shavuos night as well, but we're going to learn a little bit about here in the Orach HaTzadikim the history of Torah, of how we got from Har Sinai to where it is certainly in his day. So let's begin. Moshe Rabbeinu receives the Torah in Har Sinai. Moshe kibbol Torah miSinai, as we say in the beginning of Pirkei Avos. And the Gemara says that we know that Moshe got the Torah in Har Sinai, and that through the Pesukim of the Torah, we know that he took the Torah, he wrote one Torah scroll that he put in the Aron, and then he wrote 12 Sifrei Torah that he gave to each of the Shvatim. Each of the Shvatim got one Torah written by Moshe. Then, along with the written Torah, there was Torah Shebaal Peh. So, what's the point of Torah Shebaal Peh? What do we do? Why do we have Torah Shebaal Peh? So, Torah Shebaal Peh is the explanation of Torah Shebaksav. When the Torah says, don't do malacha, so how do I know what malacha means? It doesn't say malacha are these 39 things. The only other time we have the expression malacha is by where? By the Mishkan. So, when the Torah says, don't do malacha, and by the Mishkan it says, these are the malachos done in building the Mishkan, so we know that whatever goes into building the Mishkan is the things we can't do on Shabbos. How do we put A and B together? Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebaal Peh explains to us what it says in the Torah scroll. This is the role of Torah Shebaal Peh. The Torah is incomprehensible without Torah Shebaal Peh. It would have been cruel for Hashem to give us that scroll that sits in the Aron of your shuls and not give an explanation. The Torah says, "V'savachta kasher tzivisicha." You should slaughter the animal just as I commanded you. Where in the Torah are the laws of Shechita? Nowhere. It just says that Hashem told Moshe, you should shech the animal like I told you. So it must be what? There's an oral tradition from Moshe Rabbeinu Har Sinai of what the laws of Shechita are. Torah Shebaal Peh and Torah Shebaksav are linked together. You cannot have one without the other. If you have Torah Shebaal Peh without Torah Shebaksav, you have nothing to base it on. If you have Torah Shebaksav without Torah Shebaal Peh, it won't make any sense, and you'll end up like the Christians. Yeah.
So isn't it kind of risky that we didn't write it down?
There's a reason for why we don't write it down. A number of reasons why originally it was not written down is, first of all, if you do write it down in a book, it makes it, you can almost hijack it, because someone can change the book, someone can... But the difference is, when it comes to Torah Shebaal Peh, there's not just one person, there are thousands of chains of transmissions all going on at the same time. So we're learning the Orach HaTzadikim here, but on the other side of the world, someone else is also learning the Orach HaTzadikim, learning the same Gemaras. And when you have thousands of chains of transmission all going on for the same time from Moshe Rabbeinu to this day, that kind of keeps it in check. It's like a checks and balance to make sure everything's being done properly. Also, by keeping Torah Shebaal Peh Baal Peh, what happens is it actually creates a love of learning. If all of Torah was to be found just in a book, and there was no teacher-student relationship, would it make sense that we would have sitting around a table on a Wednesday night when we could do other things that people would come out to want to learn Torah? Torah Shebaal Peh fosters a love of learning because it creates this chain of transmission, this student-to-teacher relationship where people want to come and learn more of the Torah. If it was just sitting in books all the time, then nobody would want to pick it up. But we wouldn't be interesting to people at the end of the day. There are many, many reasons why Hashem did it that way. How do we view Torah Shebaal Peh and Torah Shebaksav together in that relationship? So we must bring Rav Hirsch's beautiful explanation. Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch writes in Shmos as follows, that the Torah Shebaal Peh is the lecture given by Hashem to Moshe and Har Sinai. And the scroll that sits in the Aron in your shuls are the notes to that lecture. If you only have the shorthand notes, but you didn't hear the lecture, is it going to make 100% sense of what you're reading? Not really. You'll miss some things, and it might not be clear. But if I only go to the lecture and I don't have notes, what's eventually going to happen? I'm going to forget the lecture. So says Rav Hirsch, that's how we view Torah Shebaal Peh and Torah Shebichtav. We view them as the notes and the lecture to go together. You need to have the Baal Peh from the teacher handing down to the student, but you also have to the Torah Nevi'im and Ksuvim, the notes of that lecture together. If it says in the Torah, Ulu Totafos Bein Enecha, that you should put Totafos between your eyes, well, what is that supposed to mean? What are Totafos? So I need to know that it's tefillin, and that they're square, and that they're black, and there's parshios inside, all the things like that. What is included in Torah Shebaal Peh? When I say this is Torah Shebaal Peh, so the Rambam says there are five parts to Torah Shebaal Peh. The first is Perushim HaMekubalim, are the standard explanations of the Torah. For example, the Torah says you should take a pre-Eitz Hadar on Sukkos. What does pre-Eitz Hadar literally mean? What's Hadar? Something is Hadar, it's beautiful. Pre-Eitz Hadar means a beautiful fruit from a tree. That's very nice. But what does that mean practically? What's a pre-Eitz Hadar practically for us? What do we take on Sukkos? Sukkos and Esrog. So how do I know that pre-Eitz Hadar means Esrog and not apricots? How do I know that? Because Torah Shebaal Peh. It's the Perush HaMekubal. When Moshe came down from Har Sinai and taught that pasuk, he said, oh, by the way, guys, pre-Eitz Hadar means Esrog. That's number one. Number two is Halacha Moshe Misinai. Traditions from Moshe and Har Sinai that have no reference anywhere in the Torah. How do I know that tefillin need to be square and black? How do I know this? So the answer is because we have a tradition from Moshe Rabbeinu and Har Sinai that tefillin have to be square and black. That's what it is. It's mentioned nowhere in the Torah. You can pull the Torah apart. You will not find a single remez anywhere that the tefillin need to be square and black. That's all the second category of Torah Shebaal Peh, hands down from Moshe Rabbeinu. The third are the midos she'atar nedreshos bahem, the rules that we use to bring out laws from the Pesukim of the Torah, that in every generation, the Chachamim, up through the Gemara, are, when the Sanhedrin existed, are allowed to use these rules to bring out the halachas in the Torah. For example, we've all heard the expression, a kal v'chomer, right? If the Torah says A, then how much more so B, right? Or a gzeira shava, where the Torah says a word over here, and it has a similar word over here. So based on what it says over here and over here, I can compare the two laws, okay? These are the midos. These are Hashem gave Moshe Rabbeinu 13 rules that the Sanhedrin can use to read the Pesukim in the Torah and to bring out deeper levels of interpretation in the Pesukim. That's also Torah Shebaal Peh. And then finally, our rabbinic laws. How do I know you have to listen to the rabbis? So, the pasuk says, "Ushmartem es mishmarti." You have to make laws to protect my laws. There are two types of rabbinic laws. There are gzeros, so the rabbis tell you not to do something. What's an example of a gzera, where the rabbis say not to do something?
Muksa.
Muksa, good. Muksa is a good one. Okay? And what's an example of a takana, a positive thing where the rabbis tell you you have to do something? What's an example of a where the rabbis say you must do something? Not don't do something, but rather you must do this. You all know it. You do it every year. Eight times. What? 8 times a year you do this. In a row. On 8 nights. Chanukah candles. Chanukah candles are a takana. It's a rabbinic law where they tell you, you must do this. They didn't say don't do something. They said, a takana is a positive rabbinic commandment, where the rabbis say, you must do A.
So what's the difference between that and not doing the law on
Shabbat? That's where the rabbis say no. Where the rabbis say, a gzera, don't do something. Okay? So, as we said, there is a prohibition to write down Torah Shebaal Peh. They couldn't write it down. And the Rambam in his Akdama explains that each one of the Baalei HaMasorah would write down short notes. They would have like short notes they would keep on their by themselves, and they would keep the ideas they heard from their teachers. In addition, they would make personal recordings of the laws of that generation that were learned out from the Yud and Gimel Midos. Eventually, comes Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, and he sees that in his time, It was too much. It was too much to remember. The Jews were going into Galus. It was too hard to remember all this stuff. So he said, if I don't do act at this moment in time, the Torah is going to be forgotten, right? I need to bend the rules. The rule is you can't write down the Torah Shebaal Peh, right? So says Rabbi Yonasi, I need to bend that rule in order to protect the rest of the Torah. Okay? Now, do we have the license to that nowadays? Like, oh, I'm going to like bend the rules of the Torah, because if not, like I'm going to like, you know, I'm going to, who knows what's happening to the Torah. We can't do that. You need to be a Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, a great tzaddik, a great Talmid Chacham, in order to be able to do that as well. And he begins to record and to compile all of the opinions of the rabbis and the generations before him, and to put them into the Mishnah. And he writes them down.
Do some of them say it was wrong with him to do that?
No, they agreed. They all agreed. Everyone agreed. Because they saw that there was no choice, that the Torah was going to be forgotten if he didn't write it down.
But before that, like, the Israel was on such a level that they were able to remember everything?
Yeah. First of all, it wasn't as expansive. The more, as the generations continue, Torah Shabbat gets bigger and bigger. You know, 100 years ago, they didn't have to know about cars on Shabbos. And, you know, 200 years ago, they didn't have to know about this thing. So, it's very busy. So they didn't have to know about all these things. So, as the Torah expands, and there's more and more literature, so then there's more things to remember over time. That's just the nature of how it works. Eventually would come the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, and they would begin to compile other works like the Sifri, the Sifra, Medrash, and things like that, that would also eventually be written down and be put into books that would be able to be learnt by the Jewish people, and it would be sent out over the Jewish world.
It was just like an unwritten rule that you weren't supposed to write it down?
Yeah. It would, no, there's a pasuk in the Torah that says you shouldn't write it down.
So the
pasuk in Tehillim says, what's the reason by not writing it down? The reason by not writing it down is that it forces a student-teacher relationship that connects you to the Masorah, that every generation is another link in the chain going back up. So we had no choice, because during the days of Yehuda HaNasi, around the year 200, there was so much Torah to remember at that point. Galus had overcome the Jews. They're already beginning scattered into Bavel and places like that. And it was too hard. They're being sent all over the world. We need a text to hold them together, in order to hold the Torah together.
But doesn't today prove that we are able to have a student-teacher relationship with it written down?
Correct. Now, but this is b'diavad. And so, because there are many people who, person lives out of town where there's not a yeshiva, anything like that, you can go online and have all the books you need and Google whatever you want, but he doesn't have a formal teacher to ask questions to. So it can exist in some way like that. Okay? Eventually, the end of the Mishnah period, the Tanayim, is around the year 500, and that's around the year 200. And from 200 to 500 is the period of the Amorayim. Those are the rabbis in the Gemara who discuss what it says in the Mishnah. They debate and discuss these things. There'll be Amorayim in Bavel, Amorayim in Eretz Yisrael. That's the Talmud Bavli and the Talmud Yerushalmi. Rabbi Yochanan is the Talmud Yerushalmi. Ravina and Rav Ashi would write and put together the Talmud Bavli. After the Amorayim comes the period of the Gaonim. Okay, that's from around 600 to around 1,000. And they clarified the Gemara and the Medrash to people who had questions. They also wrote down Shuvos and gave a psak about what's mutter and what's usser. And the Shalshels HaMasorah continued until the days of the Rambam, as the Rambam brings this entire Shalshels in his days, and he eventually write his own Mishnah Torah, making Halach accessible for many people. So the Orach HaSadikim then goes on to talk about two other regions where Jews live. So you have the Rambam in North Africa and the Middle East, keeping the Masorah over there. And you have in Germany, in Ashkenaz, right? So in Germany, there were many important Rabbanim who were compiling works of Halacha as well in the period after the Gaonim. So there was Rav Moshe of Kutzi, who wrote the Sefer Mitzvos HaGadol, the Rokeach, Rav Eliezer of Mitz, Rav Avi Ezri, and Rav Yitzchak of Vienne and the Or Zaruah, and all done. Why did they write down these books of Halacha? Because they wanted that people should be able to know Halacha if they're unable to learn Gemara. Gemara is hard. Not everybody can access Gemara and learn from the Gemara the proper Halacha. So they made contemporary books that people would be able to learn, be able to know the practical Halacha, and know the proper way to act as a Jew. In France, he writes, and he spends a lot of time talking about France. In France, there was Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam, there was the Ri, and the rest of the Bali Atosos. And in France, says the Orach HaTzadikim, the level of Torah learning was very, very high. They reviewed Shas many, many times. They were fluent in all the areas of Gemara. But nowadays, he says, we don't have the same intensity as the Bali Atosos and the students of Rashi. And we don't have the time that they would sit all day reviewing the Gemara. They knew the Gemara backwards and forwards, inside and out. They were experts in the Gemara. And their style of learning was very in-depth, on a very, very high level. But only after knowing Shas first. Only after knowing the basics and the foundation first. And then the Orach HaTzadikim really comes to his point. Why did I tell you about all of this? Why did I tell you about all of this? What was the point of this whole history? And this is the lesson we want to bring away. He says, unfortunately, people nowadays want to get into very complicated things. They want to learn esoteric things, very lofty ideas, without knowing the basics, without knowing the foundations. People, he says, this he's writing in his time, we're talking about like the 1400s. He says, people in his time don't have the patience to sit and review to master all of the basics and all of the texts, learning Tanakh backwards and forwards, learning the Mishnah, learning the Gemara, learning the Medrash. And people who have no business getting into complicated areas of halacha, they make up silly ideas, odd things, and they go and learn all these deep ideas that are not relevant to them. But they're not familiar with Shas, they're not familiar with the basic foundations of Torah, so they don't understand what they're doing. Instead, we have so many people who feel they can understand deep and complicated concepts, but they don't know Tanakh, they don't know Mishnah, they don't know Shas, and they don't know Medrash. I want to just take the Orach HaTzadikim's point and make it a little bit more relevant nowadays. We live in a generation where people are very intrigued by Kabbalistic ideas and ideas related to Kabbalah and very lofty, complicated ideas because it sounds very cool. It sounds very interesting to them. But sometimes those people who are drawn to those things are missing the basics of Torah Judaism. To know what it says in Chumash, to know what Rashi says, to know Medrash, and to know important foundational ideas in Halach and things like that. We have to be so, so careful not to be pulled after things that seem to be very complicated, very, above our heads, seemingly, I don't really understand exactly what the person is talking about, but he used a lot of Kabbalistic terminology, so it sounds very cool, and it sounds very interesting. The foundations, the yesodos, are the things we have to work on first before we get pulled in to other areas of learning. Let's just, yeah.
So, in the time of like Moshe, and like when you give it down to Shatzim, was there only one way to follow the Torah?
No. There's always Shivim Panim LaTorah. There's always different approaches to how to follow the Torah. And that's why there's 12 tribes. Each of the 12 tribes represents, a different spin, a different flavor of how to keep the Torah. You have to follow the Doraisas. You have to follow the Rabbanim. But that's why we have Minhagim, right? You have Jews from one part of the world who have different Minhagim like this, and Jews from another part of the world who have different Minhagim like this, and each one follows their own customs. And sometimes you also have different rabbis who are entitled to give opinions about different areas of halacha. You have one rabbi who says that this is mutter, another rabbi says it's aser. Both are two respected, well-regarded rabbis, but at the same time, they're entitled to different opinions. And that's how the halachic process works in a nutshell.
But Moshe said the same thing to all of them.
That's true. But let's go back to Yud Gimel Midos, the 13 principles. In the generation after Moshe gave it, no discussions. After Moshe died, so the Pasuk tells us that Asniel ben Knaz, they were so bothered by the death of Moshe Rabbeinu, they were so saddened, they forgot a number of halachas. And Asniel ben Knaz went, he was the first shofet, he went and he brought back those halachas. By using the principles of how to read the psukim and bring out ideas, he brought back a number of the ideas, a lot of the ideas that were lost in the morning after the passing of Moshe Rabbeinu. So, yes, in every generation, the rabbis of until the end of the Sanhedrin, the rabbis in generation, X could say one thing based on using the 13 principles of how to learn the Torah, and the rabbis in generation Y could use the same principles and come up with a different halacha against the previous generation. That's how far it went. So it could be that one generation of the halacha was like this, and the next generation, the Sanhedrin viewed the halacha differently based on those rules that they were given of how to interpret the Pesukim and the Torah. Let's look at the Medrash here at the end. He quotes a beautiful Medrash. Amar Rabbi Yishmael, Bo'ur e kama kasha yomitim. How difficult will the day of judgment be? She'asid HaKadosh Baruch Hu ladun kol olam kula al emek Yehoshaphat. Hashem will judge the whole world. V'kevan she'talmud chacham ba'lefanav, and because the Talmud Chacham has come before him, Omer lo, klum asakta v'Torah. Did you learn Torah, says Hashem? Omer lo, hein, I learnt it. Omer lo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem will say, Ho'il behodia lefanai, Omer li ma karisa u'mashanisa u'mashamat b'yeshiva. And Hashem will ask you, what did you learn? You told me you learned Torah. What did you learn? Tell me what you learned in my world while you were here. Mikan Amru, from here they say, Komashakara Adam Yitpos Viado, so Tesigeu Busho Klima Yomadin. Whatever a person learns, you should try to remember, so you should not be embarrassed on the day when you go before a Kadosh Baruch and Hashem will ask you, what did you learn? So we should try to make sure we remember our learning and we connect to Torah in the most serious way. Just, this is not the Orchis of Deacon, but I just want to make this point. Again, one will say, and certainly the Orcha Sadikim is certainly probably written for an audience of male readers, and a person will say, well, that's men, you know. Men have a chiv of Talmud Torah, to sit all day and learn, and that's what they have to do. But for me, it doesn't apply to me. In our generation, at this time, in 2021, in Tufshin Pei Aleph, it is so important that women also have a derech in connecting to Hashem through Torah. Because in our generation, a generation that looks to be inspired, looks to connect, looks to have a connection to Hashem, there is an explosive interest in Talmud Torah. I don't know, was everybody there on Shavuos night in Halb? Everybody was there? Everyone was over there? You saw what the building was like. 2 o'clock in the morning, 400 women coming out to learn Torah at 2 o'clock in the morning on Shavuos night. There's a desire. There's an interest to connect to Hashem through Talmud Torah. And yes, women are chayv, women are not chayv in Talmud Torah, whatever the discussion may be. But every single person here has a chelek in Torah. If Orcha Sadikim is your thing, so you learn Orcha Sadikim. And if Halacha is your thing, so you learn Halacha. And if you like Medrash over here, and if you like this Sefer, everybody, every single person should have a chelek in Torah, has something to connect to, something that inspires them, and to pursue that. Because if you're not connected now, it's so much more difficult when you're older, and you'll have families, and you'll have responsibilities, and things like that. So you have to build that connection, and that is certainly an important part of next year, of finding a chelek in Torah that you connect to, something that interests you, something that pulls you in, a sefer, an author, a topic in learning, in halacha, in machshava, something that pulls you in, that you'll be able to connect to go back to again and again, because as we see, this is, you know, the highest form to connect to Hashem through His Torah, and something that's shaykh to everybody, certainly in our generation, certainly, you know, the 100 years since Sarashino, the Beis Yaakov movement, that Torah has been put on the map for women, and it should be something that everybody here connects to in a serious way.